This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Welcome to the program. In the second part of today's show, we will be talking with Reese Ehrlich, an award-winning foreign correspondent and author of Target Iraq, What the News Media Didn't Tell You, along with Norman Solomon. Mr. Ehrlich has aired numerous reports on National Public Radio and Public Radio International. His radio documentaries have aired on the BBC, CBC, ABC, Common Ground, NPR's Horizons program, and Soundprint. I guarantee you that what he has to say is worth hearing, so please stick around for our second segment. Our first segment today will deal, as it usually does, with current events. Representative Dennis Kucinich appeared here at the Varsity Theater on Monday, May 26th. It was a sold-out event. I'd like to think that our radio interview with him last Thursday may have helped people turn out. I got to say, I was very encouraged while being slightly discouraged at the same time by that event. I was encouraged by what an eloquent speaker Dennis Kucinich turned out to be. On our program, I think we had a very tired congressman calling us from Washington, D.C., and I don't think that the energy level that he can bring to a crowd came through at all. So I hope you were lucky enough to be in the audience to hear Dennis Kucinich say a lot of things that make a great deal of sense. I shook hands with him briefly, mentioned that I'd spoken to him because he didn't know who I was. I'd mentioned that I'd spoken to him for 20 minutes for the radio interview, and he looked very happy about that, said that sort of thing really helps, and he'd be very happy to appear on the program again as the California primary looms next March. That, of course, is critical to the future of any Democrat seeking the nomination. No one is giving Dennis Kucinich much of a chance at this point in the ball game. He doesn't have a great deal of funding behind him. But in the past, in American politics, we have seen upsets. He says an awful lot of things that I like. My sound engineer, Mr. Edward McMillan, says that right now he's the guy he's going to vote for. Right now, I think he's the guy that I'm going to vote for. And there's one thing we should mention to you. If you are an independent or a non-Democrat and would like to vote in a meaningful, I think, primary next year, you can register in California as declines to state, at which point on the primary election day, you can walk into your precinct and request either of the ballots of the major party. Once you've committed, you can then choose one. Obviously, there's not going to be much of a choice on the Republican side of things. The one disappointment I may have had about Kucinich's appearance is that in the audience, I would say that I was probably the average age, and I'm pushing 50, you know, and pushing it pretty hard, actually. But I would have liked to have seen more youthful faces, more students. I think the average population in the city of Davis is considerably lower than my age, and I'm sorry that more students didn't turn out. I know that it's a three-day weekend in May, you know, before finals. It's probably not the best time to get a lot of students out to see somebody. But if he comes back, and I'm sure he will to the area, and when other candidates come to the area, I hope students will not be apathetic and turn out to hear what some of these folks have to say. Kucinich was very real. I will say that about him. And I mentioned on previous episodes of this program, I saw Ronald Reagan's only talk to a UC audience when Reagan was a man who was looking covetously at the presidency some years down the road. In fact, it was 6 years before he became president. But the difference between the Reagan talk and this Kucinich talk was quite striking. Reagan was Reagan at his slick best, winning over the crowd with his acting abilities. Kucinich was a guy that got up and just talked to people. And it was very unpolitician-like, and I think it impressed most people in the audience. If he comes back, go see him. We got an email forwarded to us from a Nancy Yamada I thought I would like to share on the air. Story goes as follows. Attorney General John Ashcroft is visiting a school. After the presentation, he announces, "Boys and girls, you can all ask me questions now." Bobby raises his hand. "I have three questions. How did Bush win the election with fewer votes than Gore? Why are you limiting American civil liberties? And why hasn't the U.S. caught bin Laden?" Just then the bell sounds and all the kids run out to take a 10-minute recess. When they return, Ashcroft says, "I'm sorry we were interrupted. Now you can all ask me questions." Charlene raises her hand. and says, I have five questions. How did Bush win the election? Why are you limiting civil liberties? Why hasn't the U.S. caught bin Laden? Why did the bell go off 20 minutes early? And where's Bobby? Now, we had a bit of comedy we wanted to do on Iraqi Idol, the choosing of the new leader of the country. But I can see The Onion beat us to this in Volume 39, Issue 15. New Fox reality show to determine ruler of Iraq. It shows, you know, they beat us to this. Anyway, funny little article on The Onion. The winner of Appointed by America will be sworn in as president of Iraq on June 24th, said The Onion, in a gala two-hour season finale broadcast live from Baghdad. And we were going to do that bit, but now if we do it, everyone will think we stole it from The Onion. That's all right. In segment three today, we'll have a bit of satire that hopefully you will enjoy just the same. And another truth versus fiction item. House Judiciary Committee hearings on 5803 included the following exchange. Representative Gerald Nadler asked Rupert Murdoch to his face if he was using foreign tax havens or loopholes, including Cuba, to avoid its share of taxes. Murdoch said, well, I might have done so in the past. I'm not denying that, which struck them as very curious at MSNBC, where they presented the transcript. Rupert actually admits to abusing tax loopholes to hide billions from the U.S. government while he's asking Congress to further deregulate his industry so he can continue to do what he does best. All right, technology item that we'll go into at some greater length in future programs. They've apparently worked out a way using ultrasound as, in essence, a sort of radio carrier wave to carry sound in an almost laser-like fashion. They can point a spotlight of ultrasound pointed at someone 100 feet away, and when the sound arrives in his vicinity, you'll be able to hear it as if you're wearing headphones. This is really fascinating, and I'm really sort of horrified to see the misuse this sort of technology might be put to. Walking down the aisle, having, like, you know, the Gillette razor blades talking to you as you're walking down that aisle. Very fascinating stuff. Going to have a lot of applications. We're going to be hearing a lot about it in the future, and at some point, we'll be talking about it at length. Today, 2003, marks the 50th anniversary of the first ascent of Mount Everest by Tenzing Norgay and Sir Edmund Hillary. A lot of folks are hoping to climb it today to celebrate that anniversary. We'll see whether they succeed. Everest, of course, has been a subject of immense fascination to the public ever since they discovered it was the world's tallest mountain. It took a long time to get to the top. I think it's curious that Tenzing Norgay and Edmund Hillary thought that after they climbed it, nobody else would bother. Well, of course, that certainly has not turned out to be the case. John Krakauer's bestseller talks about the huge numbers of people spending $60,000 for the bragging rights to be able to say they climbed the world's tallest mountain. I want to talk about this, not today, but I want to talk about mountain climbing because I've had some interesting experiences myself high on top of mountains that I think I want to share with you. But we got a lot of ground to cover today, so we can't go there. But I do want to talk about one fascinating item sent to me by a listener, clarifying the fact that the most famous Sherpa in the world, Tenzing Norgay, the man who accompanied Sir Edmund on the first ascent on the top of Everest, turns out was not a Nepali, according to a new book. He was a Tibetan. He was born in Tibet. His family moved to Nepal later on in life, but he spent most of his time in India. So his connection with Nepal is rather tenuous. It's funny how, for political reasons, it takes a long time sometimes for the truth to come out, but it is fascinating that probably the world's most famous Nepali really wasn't a Nepali. As regards Everest, I just do want to say that I was sort of, like a lot of people, captured by the romance of that mountain. And when I was traveling in Asia, I did make an effort to get out near it and hike up close to it. I didn't wind up going to the Everest base camp because of a long story. But we did spend the night in a monastery, a couple nights in a monastery, where out my window, as I was laying in bed, was Mount Everest. And I want to tell you, that was very, very cool. Let's do some science items. Health item. Apparently, scientists at Wake Forest University in North Carolina noticed that one lab mouse remained cancer-free even after several injections of cancer cells. They bred this mouse to produce 700 animals who are apparently amazingly cancer-resistant, proving that the resistance to cancer was genetic. This is very interesting. I mean, this could open the door to a lot of interesting research. We're going to follow that story. I don't know that much about it, but if scientists can figure out how those mice are remaining cancer resistant, those findings will surely pave the ways for some related human gene or drug therapies. And speaking of health and mice, forget what your mom told you. Skipping meals might actually be good for you. Studies have shown that mice fed every other day lived longer and were healthy. And in fact, it's a well-known fact, perhaps it's not as well-known as it ought to be, that of all the methods that are out there that people tout for extending your lifespan, there's only one that's been proven to be true. That is calorie restriction. In fact, ultra-low calorie diets have been shown to increase the lifespan of animal species after animal species. It's a real effect. I'm not sure, in the case of human beings, that we want to be on a near-starvation diet to get those extra few years, because after all, isn't eating an awfully important part of enjoying life on this earth? And Dr. Dean Adel calls it, you know, eat, drink, and be merry. I mean, what do you want to do? You want to live forever, you know? But the studies I've seen show that you actually are healthier while you're living longer. So this is very interesting stuff. And again, we're going to do a whole science show in a couple weeks, and this is going to be a topic we're going to return to. Now, in my backyard right now, I'm putting in a new fence. I'm digging down into the dirt, and I'm enjoying, as people do, that fresh-turned dirt aroma, which can be intoxicating to those who are great fans of gardening. Everybody recognizes the smell of fresh-turned dirt. Well, that smell is an organic chemical called geosmin, and it comes from a bacterium called Streptomyces coelicor. Apparently, the compound comes from a single gene in the Streptomyces, and in the pharmaceutical industry, where they sometimes, you know, produce huge batches of Streptomyces to make antibiotics and other drugs, they didn't like the fact that it had a smell. So they found a way to deactivate the gene and produce large amounts of chemicals without that fresh turned dirt aroma, which I think is kind of sad. But I never really thought about this. People speculate that, you know, creatures able to smell geosmin can then use it to find water, because you've got to have, you know, water to have the bacteria doing well in the soil. So interesting idea. That may explain a lot of animal behavior. And speaking of animal behavior, researchers at Sam Houston State University in Texas reported in the Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin that when they asked 112 men and 112 women to rate their own attractiveness and that of everyone else in their group, women generally agreed on which men were the best looking and on which women were the prettiest. Now, men agreed on female beauty, but bombed on rating other men's attractiveness and their own. I find this item rather interesting. In a room full of people, men are likely to agree on which women are the hottest, but they won't agree on which men are the most handsome. And they're speculating this is because in our society, women, unfortunately, are primarily judged on their looks. And from a competitive point of view, being attentive to other females' looks would make sense for women. But men, being that they establish their competitive status through income, jobs, and a host of factors, pay little attention to what makes their peers attractive, which is why, apparently, they're so bad at judging it. Well, a story that's been near and dear to our heart, the looting of the Baghdad Museum. The latest on that is they're claiming now that maybe 40,000 artifacts they thought were stolen may have been recovered, may have been placed in a very secure spot for safekeeping, and it may not be as bad as we thought. I'm a little skeptical about those pronouncements, but I hope they can find those artifacts, and it would be nice, wouldn't it, if they could find some weapons of mass destruction? If you're keeping tabs, also, we would like to point out that the still unsuccessful search for Osama bin Laden, the man who attacked the United States on September 11th, is now in its 625th day and counting. All right, final item on our show. Many months ago, we had on Michael Shermer, the editor of Skeptic Magazine. I picked up a copy last week because of the article on Roswell. Something very curious happened in 1947 in Roswell, and I must say this article really makes the case that this bits of debris, which is shown in a very clear photograph, looks like bits of mylar. If it was a interplanetary craft that crashed in Roswell, it must have been an interplanetary kite, because this thing consisted of what looks like mylar, balsa wood, and scotch tape. I mean, if you're going to make an international space station, you wouldn't go to those materials. And it's a little sad for the romance of this possible saucer crash back in 1947, but this article pretty much blows the whole thing, you know, to kingdom come. What's especially suspicious about the whole thing is, on June 24th, 1947, a man named Kenneth Arnold sighted unknown objects over Oregon and Washington and described them as saucers skipping across water. The press coined the term flying saucer, and things have never been quite the same since. Well, 10 days before that announcement hit the papers, a rancher, Mac Brazel, found paper, rubber, and foil debris out on his ranch. After hearing the saucer news on July 5th, he decided he better notify the sheriff about the wreckage. Well, they went out and gathered up the wreckage, and for reasons that still seem rather mysterious, the Air Force's intelligence officer, Jesse Marcel, the man who appears holding the mylar-like stuff in the photograph, announced that the Air Force had now captured one of them flying saucers. If he wanted to divert attention away from whatever crashed out on the Roswell Ranch, I don't think he could have possibly picked a worse cover story, because it's reverberating ever since. It's interesting that the article makes very clear all this stuff about aliens and saucers was not, definitely not a part of any of the initial reports, even the one that said Air Force captures saucer. Oops, we had to retract that story. That came about much later and, is even much shakier than the story about, you know, the captured flying disc. Anyway, I'm kind of sorry to see that one put to bed. Kind of like I'm sorry to see the fact that Bigfoot turned out to have been a guy with large footprints stomping around up in Red Bluff in 1958. But sadly, it turns out that appears to be the case too. Maybe we'll get Michael Shermer to come back on the show again and talk about some of this stuff. He's a good speaker. All right, that's it for our first segment today. Please stay tuned for Rhys Ehrlich, award-winning foreign correspondent and author of Target Iraq, What the News Media Didn't Tell You, in our second section. This is Radio Parallax. I'm your host, Douglas Everett, and you're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM.